Welcome to the French Connections Weekend Edition. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Today's date, December 16th, 2006. It's a Saturday, ladies and gentlemen. Saturday night here in France. We've got a 34-degree temperature here with driving rain. So I'm wondering if it's going to drop a couple of more degrees. We're going to get some snow. Could be. It'd be nice to have some snow. I haven't seen any since last year. But that being said, we've had a lot of things hit the airwaves recently, especially with this Iran conference that has been going on here. I looked at it, Eric looked at it. It seemed to us that somehow either the Iranians got duped into bringing on a couple of clowns into their conference and set up, or they did it intentionally. We haven't been able to suss out whether it was an intentional act to destroy their credibility, but they brought a guy named David Duke in. David, by the way, had a wonderful tete-a-tete with Wolf Blitzer, and he gave Wolf Blitzer quite a black eye. However, it has worked in the favor of the Zionists in that David Duke's ties to this conference and his ties to white supremacist groups across the country, and his continued ties, and his old membership, and it was an old membership, and when he was, I think he was in his early 20s, he was part of the movement for the Grand Wizards and whatnot of the KKK. But what most people don't know is the KKK was formed by Masonic lodges. Now, again, we get back to the Masonic lodges. Now, who started the Masonic lodges? We know Zionists did. It's a Jewish conspiracy that dates back even before the recent era. This goes back all the way to Weishaupt and having new Bohemians come into America, set up these lodges. But I thought I'd bring in our resident expert on many subjects and a friend of mine, Eustace Mullins, because Eustace has more to say about subjects such as these than anybody. And I want to talk a little bit about who's behind some of these people, such as American Free Press, a guy named Mark Lane, and others. But I'll bring them up right now. Eustace, are you with me?
Yes, indeed.
Well, Eustace, you know, this conference, it garnered a lot of attention. However, the attention it got was quite negative, and most of it was about David Duke. And now David, of course, says some interesting things. He does say some positive research things about, but nothing new. Never anything new. And here's the problem I got with him, and maybe you can confirm this. He's so tainted by the connotations that and his associations that anytime you see his name, you already know the press is trying to discredit someone. Am I correct in thinking that?
Oh, yes. They use David like that all the time. They used David when I went to his New Orleans conference last year. And then David was there only in New Orleans to fight me when I got there. He begged me for 6 weeks to attend this conference. I told him I couldn't afford it. Then he told me he would raise money. He raised $1,200 to pay for my expenses to come down there.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got to New Orleans, he embezzled every penny of it. I had no room reservation, no meal money, nothing. And so he had me up a barrel.
Yeah, he's a real character, isn't he? Well, and he's been known to toss his money on the roulette wheel occasionally, didn't he?
Oh, he's a great gambler, womanizer, and drinker. And David tries to be all the things that bad boys are.
Yeah, well, and his proclivities may be exactly why he fits right into the mold that we've developed. You know, they don't pick useful idiots for no reason. They pick them because they are just that. They're able to be controlled. And
David always does what he's told to.
Yeah. Well, what we've discovered is that there seems to be a direct association between David Duke and the Southern Poverty Law Center. And why? Now, guess who they brought out as the rebuttal person for Duke onto CNN? They bring out the associate director, a Jewish guy from Southern Poverty Law.
Oh, my gosh, that whole Morris Deese crowd. You know, they have $60 million in cash they've raised.
They do.
The gold mine.
Well, what is the history of that organization, and do they have ties to Mark Lane?
Oh, yes, they all work together. Well, you know, Morris Deese started out, he was going to be a Klansman in the South, and he was going to get on to the Negro movement, and he quickly switched sides when he found that he couldn't raise any money attacking the blacks, and so he decided to work for them. And that's when the money started rolling in. Jewish groups in New York poured in tens of millions of dollars. He was rolling in money.
Now, they seem to have taken full control of it through the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith.
Oh, yes. They're definitely an ADL agency. When you say Southern Poverty Law Center today, you're saying ADL.
Well, now, these folks, what we know they do is they go out and create hatred and then seem to fight it.
Oh, yeah. They're agents for provocateurs all the way.
Yeah.
They're there to create situations.
Well, so one of their main go-to guys has been David Duke. And, of course, as soon as he got off the air speaking, they brought this Southern Poverty Law Center guy on. And it was remarkable that this association has not been exposed better. And I thought that maybe you had some historical references or some anecdotal stories about things that you've seen over the years referring to the relationship between Southern Poverty Law and the way they use Asian provocateurs to get their hate message out. Wasn't there a fella in Stokey when they were running the Nazis? Wasn't that a big boon for Southern Poverty?
Oh, that they really, with that Skokie deal, they hit the front pages. And because Chicago's a great news center, you see, the big news association is there. And so they took this Skokie thing, and it was totally artificial because it's Michael Collins, who was supposed to be the great Nazi, turned out to be a Jewish boy.
You couldn't, you know, if somebody told you this, you'd say, get out of here. But you know something, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to tell you, Eustace is right on the money. And this is one of the reasons why I have told you so often that people over at AFP and people like David Duke, while they do speak a lot of facts, they do that to bring you in. They have to have enough truth, Eustace, to dupe their followers.
Oh, yes. They have the sucker play all the way, the come-ons. And once they get you in their tent, they've got you.
Well, and it seems as though a lot of very powerful and well-placed money has found its way into their hands as a result of seemingly being fighting, you know, they seem to be fighting the bad guys, but when you look under the veil, they're with the bad guys.
Oh, well, Mark Lane, you people find people like Mark Lane. Mark Lane was a boyfriend of Eleanor Roosevelt, and he was a well-known Jewish communist. And then he turns up as the editor of Carlos' paper, The Spotlight. And he ran the whole thing, and he ran it into the ground, and so Carlo tried to get a good friend of mine, an old friend named Bill Gill. He wrote a book called On International Trade, and he was a very well-known and socially recognized man in all up the East Coast. So Carlo comes in and asks Bill, who was broke at the time, he said, will you take over Spotlight for $75,000 a year? And so Bill told him, he says, I can't work for Mark Lane. Well, nobody could work for Mark Lane if they were sincere in the Radio Freedom Movement.
Well, what is Mark Lane is, of course, he's Jewish. Mark Lane is not his name.
Oh, I have no idea what his name is. It's probably Opowitz or something.
Okay. Well, you know, the simple fact is, when Christopher Bolin was beaten up, Willis Carto offered the services of Mark Lane as his lawyer.
Oh, yes. And, you know, Mark Lane has a perfect record. He loses every suit that he engages in for a patriot.
Well, this is the other thing, because we've got this guy Mike Berger doing the same thing for a lot of the 9/11 people.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, when you take a look at this stuff, once you've got the flow of the way it's done, you start piecing together how it's been done in the past as well. Now, the Southern Poverty Law Organization, they're centered out of Atlanta, aren't they?
Yeah, it's supposedly a Southern group. And, you know, it's supposed to furnish lawyers for oppressed poor black people. But in all the years that Morris Deeds has been running it, he's refused to have any black lawyer work for them. He only has white lawyers.
And usually Jewish lawyers.
Oh, no, they're almost always Jewish. They do that in New York.
So what is the way that they actually – I know that they go out and finance. They have financed some activity up in Idaho in some of the this militia movement stuff. And I think they were doing it for the ADL in order to whoop up some This was during the Clinton era. They needed to make these militias look very dangerous.
Oh, they did. The ADL claimed that the militias were the greatest threat to the whole country. And I knew all the militia people out there. They were very hardworking. They didn't have any dime of money. And they were living on a shoestring. And the ADL is trumpeting that these are the great threat to the whole United States.
But see, it seems like once those militia movements were targeted, they were infiltrated, and then they were used as provocateur groups that could be used as enemies. In other words, some of those groups were actually fabrications, weren't they?
Oh, they didn't exist. This is a favorite technique of Southern Poverty Law Center. They put out long lists of 375 so-called hate groups in the United States, and most of them are non-existent. They might have three groups, and they say they got 375.
Well, it's no surprise to us. As soon as, like I said, David Duke got off of his presentation on CNN, the commentator that was brought up was the associate director of Southern Poverty Law. It happened to be a Jew that was interested in spinning David Duke's story. And, of course, they used that Duke story to discredit that Holocaust conference. Now, one thing I'd like to maybe toss around here is, why would the Iranians select David Duke as a participant in such a conference unless they themselves are part of a lie?
Well, you wonder, because David is always a front man for somebody. He's working for somebody whenever he makes his appearance, and he gets tremendous press coverage all over the world.
Well, press coverage goes hand in hand with Jewish-controlled press.
It does indeed. I've told people for years, you cannot trust anybody who gets on national television, because they own them, and that's the only way they can get on that national
television. Well, they tried to bring me on to make a mockery of my work. The 2020 people started talking to me about doing a segment, and they wanted to find a way to make me look like a lunatic.
Well, either that or a big smear, that's all.
Well, you know, of course, on the cutting room floor, they can make anybody look like a nut.
Oh, they sure can, and everything serious that you said will be edited out.
Yeah. Well, now that we have an understanding of the basics behind this, I take a look at the radio networks such as Genesis and Republic Broadcasting, and what we've noticed over the last few months is they've almost filled their entire list of broadcasters with Jews.
Oh, yes.
They've got Abramson and then Solomon, and I mean, the list goes on, and Burmese and Barrett, and it goes, I mean, it's unbelievable. And I'm wondering, are they so worried about the message now, what's going on, do you think, that they would fill up their entire roster with Jewish presenters?
Well, that is crucial, because we're moving into a very crucial period, you know. The Jews are running scared because they got the whole world against them, and they realize they got to trim the sails. That's what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, see, and here's the problem. You know, the Zionist element within the Jewish community has, of course, has the rank and file, hardworking, workaday Jew completely buffaloed. These people in Brooklyn that go to work every day that are giving money to the ADL, they don't know what's going on in their name.
Well, I think I don't think hardworking people give any money to the ADL. I think it comes from all the big Jewish bankers, because right off Wall Street. You know, Wall Street just announced that they put out, they made so much money last year that they gave out $50 million in bonuses to the New York offices. And they said every bit of that bonus money is going to be spent on $25 million apartments in New York. They paid $25 million for a fairly modest apartment.
Well, actually, the public that they fleeced pays for it.
The money comes from these bonuses and so forth. They don't work for it, that's for sure.
Well, you know the work that Eric, myself, and Bolin have done, and of course, we follow up on most of the things you've been doing for years. Now, we've got them nervous about the things that are happening. I mean, we've got this subject on everybody's lips. Now, what is the reason why people like Mark Lane have not been outed more? I mean, it looks like to us that American Free Press should be in the trash bin already.
Oh, yes. Mark Lane should have been exposed years ago. But, yeah, everybody knew But they had this Mark Lane, this Jew who was running the whole spotlight operation. Carlo was just a front man.
Well, why can he still be there in that control position and not have been outed already?
Well, you know, he's never been outed. People muttered under their breaths about Mark Lane, but nobody ever complained publicly about him. And when somebody like me went to the spotlight offices, Mark Lane treated me like dirt.
Yeah. Well, that wouldn't surprise me either. And of course, you know, our false friend over there, Mike Piper, ended up at that conference too, and he's the.
Oh yes, he's right in the middle of everything right now.
Yeah, he is. He's trying to keep him. Carto and Lane are the American Free Press, and of course, you know, they won't ever go anywhere where serious research is being done.
Nothing. There's no serious research ever appeared in that paper.
No. Well, in fact, Christopher Bolin has told us on numerous occasions that when he did find something very significant out about 9/11, they wouldn't print it.
That's a pattern that they follow. And, you know, Carto always claimed to be a booster of me, but in the last 5 years, he has never printed one article. I would send him important articles and I'd say, boy, this is something we should get into. And it never appeared.
Mm.
My name never appeared on the masthead of the spotlight in all the years I knew Carto.
Well, and here's the other person that Duke was promoting, and we knew he was a shill from the beginning, too, and David Irving down here. And, of course, we know David Irving was living in the southern homosexual haven of Key West, and we know that he had a proclivity for you know, midnight flings with the boys, and it seems as though he's a guy that has turned out, for whatever reason. He may have started out as an honest broker for facts, but it's certainly not the case today.
Oh no, every time I went to a David Irving lecture, he would repeat this tired story. But he met some German major after the war, and he was telling him that he had seen the executions of all the Jews all over Europe, and he personally had witnessed it and horrified it. But he never gave this German major a name.
Mm.
He just said, a German major.
Mm-hmm.
And that typical sort of thing Irving does.
So, so why one must wonder why he would have been jailed. And we've speculated in our own private conversations, Eric and I, he might have been caught as a pedophile or something, and they might have said to him, look, you're going to go to jail for us because we need a guy that we need to frighten the truth speakers out there away from talking.
Well, more important than a jail sentence is sometimes a period of vacation and retraining for a person like David Irving or David Duke. You know, David Duke just did a 4-year income tax prison term.
Did they make him go away for 4 years?
4 years. He was away for 4 years.
Where they put him in one of these federal vacation prisons?
Well, no one seems to know where he was during that time.
they don't know what prison he was in.
I never could find out what prison he was in or whether he was in prison in Russia or the United States. The whole thing was very vague, so it must have been a cover-up of some kind. And, you know, after doing this so-called prison term for income tax evasion, then he appears on worldwide news as a new and much more influential figure.
Well, he's tried his darndest to weasel his way into our camp, and of course, we've thwarted him at every turn because the guy is just a sack of lies. But you know, he does win over people because he does have a certain capacity to speak flamboyantly.
Oh, he's like an Elvis Presley. I heard one talk he gave there in New Orleans, and he had the old ladies weeping, you know, because you never heard such faults in your life. From anybody in the whole freedom movement, I never heard anything like it. It was an incredible performance.
Well, he is. He's an actor, and he's good at
he's
it.
An actor, but he's totally insincere. There's never any sincerity. Only a fool would ever be taken in by him because he's so transparent in what he does.
Well, so now, you know, I'm glad we did this little talk here, Eustace, because, you know, this guy is garnering a lot of attention. And
he is. He's moving right up in the top row. It's amazing. And this guy has no achievements in his life. It's incredible.
Well, and here we are. You know, we're struggling for any recognition we can get. And of course, as soon as he gets that mainstream media attention, bingo, he's a big hero.
Oh, yeah. He's right in front there. He becomes number one.
Well, what do we do to combat this false flag stuff that they do in America through Southern Poverty Law, and how many other people are involved? Is it possible that Southern Poverty Law is behind the financing of some of these patriot radio stations, like Michael Corbin, who refuses to talk about Jewish issues, or some of these others?
Oh, I think they're financing everything because Southern Poverty has been exposed many times as having a nest egg from $60 to $100 million. And no one seems to know where it comes from. It comes from Jewish people in New York. And he's sitting on this money. He never paid any taxes on it because he's a tax exempt group because he's fighting for the little man.
Oh, yeah. As he scurries off in his limousine, probably to a rendezvous with an underage child or something.
Well, Deese uses his $100 million to attack people like Richard Butler. Now, Richard Butler, I knew well, and was an old man, a tired old man, and they went in and took his little camp up in Idaho, took it right away from him with the fake court proceedings.
How did that happen? What's that about?
Well, what they did, they hired a couple of provocateurs to roam around Butler's place at night, and they had guards, and so the guards tried to chase them away, and so they sued him for intimidation and threats and so forth, and they took his entire property and put Butler out in the gold. The poor old guy died alone out there, and no property whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, so they actually look for scams that they can actually take honest brokers for fact and try to destroy them. Was this man Butler involved in trying to expose the crimes?
Oh, yes. He was an engineer, a British engineer, and he devoted his life to trying to expose the conspiracy. And so he was the number one on their hit list, so they went after him and just took him out of business. He died a few months after they took his house. They had nowhere to go.
Now this fellow, Serge Klarsfeld, that I talked to you about earlier.
Oh, I've heard his name for years.
Yeah, he's about your age, actually, but he's still very active and aggressive with what's happening here in France.
Well, he goes back to the World War II period. You know, he was very big at the end of World War II. Klarsfeld and his wife went after all the so-called Nazis in France, and they were all wiped out.
Well, Professor Ferrison is actually under the gun right now. Jacques Chirac is calling for a new charges to be leveled against the professor.
Oh, yes. Well, they actually flood you with so many false charges, you can't defend yourself against them all, though.
Well, the last one, they hit him up for a big fine. I mean, here in France, you know, you don't have very much money because the tax level is about 61%.
Yes, it's very expensive.
So I mean, this guy, you know, when they hit you with fines, a $10,000 fine is almost like a million because most people don't have $10,000, and that includes me. And so here's this guy, a retired professor, being slammed, and there really is no support in the French public for this man.
Yeah, and he is a professor, and education still carries some weight in France and anywhere in Europe, and Germany and Italy and everywhere. If you're a professor at a university, you're considered a certain amount of respect and belief. So that's why they try to wipe them out.
Well, and the problem now is with his return to France, they got, of course, they had Klarsfeld on the public TV.
Oh, yes.
And now, you want to hear this, Eustace. I pay 125 euros a year in a tax for that channel.
Oh, good God.
And so I was paying for propaganda on a channel, and guess who the interviewer was? A woman named Drucker, a Jewish gal whose father owns the big network.
Good gosh.
So when you look behind it, the Jewish father owning M6, which is a big French channel, puts his daughter in charge of the news division of the public TV, and she brings on Serge Klarsfeld for an interview.
Yeah, that's the way they operate.
Well, and boy, oh boy, did they slime the propaganda everywhere. I you know, you start looking at this stuff, especially from a perspective of knowledge, it becomes very frightening because here's the problem, Eustace. How are you gonna go up against such a well-organized machine? And that seems to be, but the only thing we've got on our side is we're much more nimble and we've got the truth.
And we keep fighting. That's what keeps us going.
Well, yeah, that's right. But, you know, the interesting thing is they got a lot of hubris, and they make big mistakes because of this hubris.
Well, they make a lot of mistakes, but you see, they get away with it because they never document anything. The wildest charges they can dream up, they put it right on national TV, and it goes out, and there's never any repudiation.
Yeah. Well, I thought to myself, oh, boy, if I could just sit at the same table with this guy Klarsfeld on that broadcast and have a chance to, rebut his statements. Of course, nobody would ever give me the chance to do that.
They never will, because when they were attacking me a couple of years ago when I was in Canada, they tried to deport me from Canada, and it was all a big smear. And so they actually had one-hour programs denouncing me on that main radio television channels in Canada.
With no debate, just
no
one side.
Debate. And I tried to call them up from here, and I called the station, but I couldn't get on the station. And so they said, well, Eustace Bellis refuses to appear. And I was on the telephone at my own expense trying to get the station on the line.
Well, yeah. They had a guy on named Moonman over in Britain on the Islamic channel, which is a big farce. It's not Islamic at all. It's a Jewish-run channel. And they put this guy Moonman on to talk about Zionism, and they were debating me. And they cut me off, wouldn't let me speak the whole time. And my partner Eric and I were both on the line together, and neither one of us could get a word in. And this guy Moonman had the entire platform for himself.
Oh yeah, that's
and they made it. They tried to make me out to be a complete loon.
Uh huh.
So I know the tactics. I've actually been a victim. You know, you don't have to be victimized more than once to understand it.
I've been doing it to me for 60 years.
Well, you know, Eustace, we still are giving them black eyes all over the place. And
we really are, because the truth is on our side, and the truth will out if you will stick to it.
Well, it has so far. Have you noticed in the last year the kind of changes that have really developed?
Oh, they're amazing to me, because I've been in it for so long, and now stuff is coming out on the internet that you never dreamed would be on there.
Well,
everybody's picking it up. People, very ordinary people, are picking it up. I mentioned something about the courts here to a woman on the phone a couple of days ago, and she said, oh, well, the courts are British, aren't they? That is, the courts in the United States are actually the old British courts, Admiralty courts from the King George III era.
Well, that's right. And our lawyers are actually, the Bar Association is beholden to the British, isn't it?
Oh, yes. It's headquartered in England. They're working for the English Crown.
Well, when you take a look at MI5, they've got a triangle on their symbol, and it says, and there's the all-seeing eye at the top, and it's Masonic.
Oh, yes. Very much
now,
so.
You want to tell the people what the Masonic Lodge's development was from? It came from the Jewish Weishaupt group, didn't it?
Oh, yes. It all came right out of Central Europe, out of Germany. And they were so strong that when Queen Anne in England had no heirs, they moved the Jewish Hanover family, the Duke of Brunswick, right in as the King of England. They became King George I, King George II, King George III. They didn't even speak English, but these were the kings of England. And the Masons took over the whole country right then.
So England hasn't been led by a British king since Longshanks.
Oh, that's quite true.
Well, you know, interesting when you take a look at all this stuff. And, of course, that was all during that period of Mary, Queen of Scots, and the big fight before the crown.
Oh, yes.
Well, when we take a look at what's going on now in Europe, what's the big center for these people? Is it's Holland and Belgium, isn't it?
Yeah, they seem to be everywhere, Holland and the Netherlands. I had a long letter from a guy in the Netherlands just the other day, and he was giving me information about how in the Netherlands now all of the expensive homes and big mansions are being taken over by Jews.
Well, you know, and here's the saddest thing, Eustace, and you know this as well as I do, because Ben Friedman was Jewish, and so was Myron Fagan, and so many others. And I've got friends of mine in the Jewish community that work with me on these research projects. Many of these folks that are at the lower level in the Jewish community don't know anything about this stuff. This is a conspiracy at the very highest level, where most of the Jews are being lied to as well.
Oh, yes, the Jews are the victims as much as anybody. But Ben Friedman was playing all sides, there's no question about it.
Well, he was Jewish and then not. I mean, didn't he become a Christian or something?
Oh, I don't know. I could never keep up with Ben. Ben changed sides so often you couldn't keep up with him from one day to the next. But Myron Fagan was a sincere man. He was a wealthy Hollywood Jewish screenwriter. And when my Federal Reserve book was published in 1953, everybody denounced the book, and ADL said it was anti-Semitic and so forth. And Myron Fagan went on the radio and defended my book and praised it. And he was the only person in the world that would give honorable mention to my work.
Now, why was Ben Friedman out there telling the truth about this conspiracy, and then is it for his safety of his family that he kind of relented a little?
No, his family. He claimed his family was being attacked all the time, but it wasn't really. His son went to a Jewish school, and he was beaten up a couple of times. But that was the only, and they weren't in any danger. And that was the only instance I ever knew about. But you see, Ben Friedman launched a whole new school of thought when he came up with the concept of the good Jews. And Ben Friedman informed the world, well, there's bad Jews and there are good Jews, and you've got to learn about the good Jews. And that's what he did. He was telling people about the good Jews. And it screwed up everything because nobody could figure out who is a good Jew and who's a bad Jew.
Well, we're still having that problem. I made a recent audio file, a video presentation saying Jewish investigators of 9/11 need to step back because most of them are obfuscating.
Oh yes, absolutely. Well, they've been obfuscating from the very beginning, and from the date of 9/11, you have never seen an honest fact about 9/11 in any national newspaper.
Well, but even on the Internet, most of the researchers on the Internet are just a pack of lying dogs.
Oh, yeah, they're there to obscure the trail.
Yeah. Well, what's your take on 9/11 as far as you... we see it as a complete Mossad and upper elite Republican Party. In other words, the upper elites of the Republican Party became Jewish with Wormser and Faith, and we had, of course, Wolfowitz and Dov Zollkeim and Ari Fleischer and the Lubavitcher Group and all that. And so they had their allies all in place. They had their imbecile monkey head, George Bush, and so they had everything they needed. All they needed to do then was just to execute the plan.
Well, that's right. They needed the provocative act, the act of provocateurism that brought on Pearl Harbor, World War One, World War Two, and the Lusitania in World War One. And it's been a pattern that goes way back. I mean, they didn't starting wars overnight. They've been doing it for the last 300 years.
And with the goal of completely usurping all national governments and having a single international government, is that not correct?
Yes, because you see, when they declare war, then they bring on martial law. And with martial law, you can do anything you want to.
Mm-hmm.
And you can stop all your opposition. You can lock them up. Because after 9/11, you didn't dare criticize the government because you would be a traitor.
Mm-hmm.
And you were an Arab terrorist, obviously, if you were covering up for the 9/11 people.
Well, it'd be hard to peg that one on me there, Eustace. My family stepped off the Mayflower, so, I mean, I'd be hard to press to be calling me an Arab terrorist.
Well, they don't mind calling me an Arab terrorist. I have to show double ID, photo ID anywhere I go now.
Well, you know, and that's everybody. I mean, and what they've done here.
I'm not complaining just about myself. Essentially, every American today is an enemy alien.
That's right. Everybody's a potential criminal.
Oh, yes. And you're subject to being locked up at once because some alert official has got to spot this terrorist and lock him up before he can blow up the whole country.
Well, what we've been doing is trying to enlist through, because, you know, look, Eustace, you and I both know, right down the street from you, you probably have a police officer that lives there. He's just a regular guy.
Oh, I had one that lived next door, a black police officer who lived next door to me for 15 years.
Now, here's the thing. I mean, they get propaganda when they go into the office, but basically they're not decision makers mostly.
They're not decision makers at all. They do what they're told to do. The police department is a military operation. You obey orders, and that is it. You don't question any order.
Well, it seems like to me, though, if we can get some county sheriffs and some small
county
village...
The county sheriff is your best. The county sheriff is almost independent. But they've got them all wrapped up. You see, what David Hoover did in the 1940s, he began bringing in the county sheriffs from all of the United States to take training at Quantico with the Marines. And so he brainwashed all of the county sheriffs in the New World Order.
And Hoover was a big New World Order guy.
Oh, yes. He was New World Order all the way. And he was also head of the International Home Intern, the homosexual organization, which was exposed in Nation magazine in 1955. They did a series on it. They did four articles. And it's the only expose that's ever been done in Home Intern. Not one magazine or newspaper followed the Nation's lead in exposing the Home Intern.
What is it called, Home Intern?
The Home Intern is like the Comintern, you know, the International Communist Espionage Organization. And so the Nation magazine coined the term Comintern for the Homosexual International Terrorist Organization.
And are they by and large a controlled group through Zionism, or are the Zionist leadership also homosexuals?
No, it's not particularly homosexual, but the Zionist leadership works with the Comintern, always has, homosexuals. They love to work homosexuals into their various organizations. And sooner or later you're going, and that's why the laws against hate speech are no longer able to criticize homosexuals anywhere in the world, because it becomes hate speech and you're subject to immediate arrest.
Well, here where I live as well, and I went to college, university in New York City, down in Greenwich Village, and I never cared very much whether people were homosexual or they weren't, and I still don't. It's none of my darn business what somebody does behind the doors of their own home. However, when you take it a step further and you start using that situation, that position, as a way to leverage control over other people, that's when it becomes a very big problem, and that's when I have to step in and take offense.
Oh, it's a control operation all the way. I went to New York University in 1946, in Greenwich Village, too, and there were homosexuals everywhere. But at that time, I didn't pay much attention to them because they were everywhere, but you couldn't very well ignore them.
Well, yeah. I mean, but see, at the same time, Eustace, I mean, there were people that I ran into on a daily basis, said hi to, and had no problem with. I mean, I don't care about situations like that. It's when they use that problem, that situation of someone being gay, as a way to leverage their control and then have that control placed on me.
Oh, yes. And they use homosexuals as part of their operations. All of the intelligence groups rely heavily on homosexual influence to get things done and get information.
Now, is that every country? And is France a little different than some of the other countries? Because it doesn't seem like this whole mindset of the Anglos has come here.
That's right. You go back to Napoleon Bonaparte and the French Sûreté, and French intelligence has always been less controlled than England or Germany.
Well, because it seems like the French part company often, and it doesn't often follow, when I'm looking at it, exactly the way you would expect it if they were in league. But now it's getting worse, though. It's starting to look like almost everything I see, the French are starting to go along with the Anglos.
Well, they are. I guess they've been infiltrated too, or controlled.
Yeah.
But they were. Well, in fact, all the major intelligence organizations, KGB, CIA, MI6, they all work together.
Are there divisions showing up between Russia and this group? It seems like the oligarchs, Berezovsky and the rest, are having problems with the Russian FSB. The Russians seem to want some of the control back over their money system and money that they, in other words, there are some greedy Russians who don't want to turn over all their cash to these people.
Oh, yes.
So there's some problems developing, aren't there?
There are a lot of problems because the people that are making money in Russia are trying to hold on to some of it, and that's causing the problem.
So Putin is not completely on board with the Zionists?
No, he is not. He was head of the KGB, and he is a little more independent than a lot of intelligence people. And that's why everyone seems to think that he was behind this most recent murder of this agent in Russia. But I don't think he really ordered it personally. I think he got in somebody's way, and they just got rid of him.
Well, it seems like to me that this guy Berezovsky or one of these other Yukos owners or the guys that he kicked out of Russia had a good reason to smear Putin.
Oh, yes.
Because, hey, look, if the FSB wanted you dead, they would have figured out a cleaner way to do it. There's a better way to get you.
A less conspicuous way. Why would this killing of one KGB officer become a worldwide sensation?
Yeah. This was used for public consumption all the way.
Oh, that's all public consumption. And they're still showing the dead agent. They show him on TV every night. Show him dying in the hospital.
Yeah. Well,
he's a movie star.
It has to be Zionist led because it wouldn't show up on their airwaves unless they wanted you to think this certain way.
No, you don't get they don't give anything that much space and that much time and that much effort unless it's a primary objective.
Do you think we frightened them off of action in Iran, or do you think they're still working hard to make that happen?
Oh, no, I don't think they're frightened off at all. They're still part of the agenda. Mm. You see, the program for the 21st century was that they were going to knock off Iraq, Iran, Syria, and Saudi Arabia and get all the oil fields lined up. And,
so that they could prop up the petrodollar.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to have the world turn away from the reserve currency dollar. They need that to control the world with at the moment. So they want to keep the world buying their oil through dollars so that you have to use the dollar as your exchange mechanism.
Well, it keeps the whole world economy operating. It's sort of the grease for the whole thing.
So if the table leg comes out from underneath the dollar, we're in big trouble, aren't we?
Well, we certainly are. I got a clipping the other day that China and Japan now have 52% of the U.S. debt. And so they can call a tune at any time.
Yeah, well, I tell you, it's $900 billion for one of them and a trillion for the other.
Oh, that's right.
But, you know, the Rothschilds could pipe in a couple of trillion anytime they want.
Well, they can, and they've been doing it. You mentioned the derivatives coming up pretty soon.
Yeah.
$17 trillion in derivatives, and they can. I don't see how they can cover that. That's not a rollover proposition. They're due.
So when are those due? 2008, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Well, some of those hedges are already starting to come due, and you're seeing the pressure come out on some of these smaller hedge funds because they can't rob one account to pay another one anymore.
No, they can't, and the pressure is really going to get hot in about 3 months, spring of 2007.
What's coming due in 2007, Eustace?
Well, the derivatives are coming due.
Yeah, it goes all the way from 2007 into 2008. You get every 3 months, you're going to get a bunch of new positions coming due. Am I right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think they worked out a system to handle it. I don't think they've got the resources.
Well, you know what they've been doing that we found? They've been running new scams to raise new money that are out further into the future than the ones they're paying off now. In other words, they're trying to expand the base of the Ponzi scheme to keep the ones coming due paid off. They're using naked short selling over at Goldman Sachs and at Morgan Stanley. They're doing all this stuff. It seems like they're trying new scams to keep the old one floating.
Oh yes, they have to be adept and have to be able to devise new methods all the time because this thing is a very crucial situation.
Well, I have a sense that. And when the experts from some of the other countries, that are invested in the dollars see. Because, you know, look, you can't get a mathematician to look at this and not see a problem.
Oh, yes.
And once they start doing the numbers and in China and in other places, they're going to say, wait a minute, this is going to cost us everything. We're not going to stay here.
Oh, no, they wouldn't. Why should they sit still for that? They're going to do something about it.
Well, do you know that most of the factories in China have been financed by Rothschild money, right?
Oh, yes.
So it just looks like they're just going to exchange the American public for the Chinese.
That's right. And pretty soon they'll be harvesting body organs from Americans instead of Chinese.
And they'll be shipping them to China.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Yeah. You know, when you look at this stuff I'm so jaundiced these days. I don't trust anything or anybody anymore because I've seen such sickness in these last couple of years that I can't even believe it.
Well, I haven't trusted anybody since I met Ezra Pound in 1948. And when he was telling me the background of everybody in the world, there was nobody left to trust.
Well, you and I go back now for some years and we've, you know, I don't know about what you think about the French Connection, but we put out the best product on the air, I think.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, there aren't too many of us left here, Eustace, that are telling the truth.
No, but you got to stick with it.
Well,
because there is some light at the end of the tunnel right now.
It is. They are reeling, and I can see it and smell it. And here's
oh,
the other
it is.
Thing.
This is a different world from what was 5 years ago. There are things going on now that were inconceivable 5 years ago.
Yeah. Well, it looks like, if they do call a martial law, like you said, that could get dicey. What do you think?
Well, it certainly could, because the people have already got enough martial law and police state operations that they can't take any more anyway. They can't increase the pressure on the people like that. They won't take it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, and especially now that many, many people who are gun owners in America saw what they did down in New Orleans, that they don't want that visiting their hometown.
Oh, good gosh, no. And
well, we looked into that. That was what they were using that for as a laboratory.
Oh, yes. And it took all those people out of New Orleans and moved them right into Bush's state of Texas across the border. And they're all raising hell in Texas right now. They turned Texas into a jungle state.
Yeah, it is the law of the jungle in the big cities. They've taken poor people and given them no resources and dropped them into the middle of a big city. And what do you? I mean, people have to eat, Eustace. They'll do anything to eat.
Well, they have to keep going. They have to live from day to day. And when you're dropped into a big city with no resources, you got to find something. And the only thing I can do is go out and rob people on the street.
Yeah, Houston, Texas, and some of the other cities, Dallas, have seen a 20% and 30% jump in violent theft.
Oh, yeah, these were violent criminals when they came over there. They didn't need to be trained to do any of that when they arrived in Houston, Texas. They've been doing it all their lives.
Oh, boy, who'd have thunk all this stuff? It gets me scared here because, you know, you know, 5 years ago, I was living in the dream. I had no idea. 2 years ago, Eustace, I had no idea this stuff was going on. I was as duped as the rest of the world. And when I started seeing these facts and I got angry, it made me sit up and take notice to things that I had always seen but didn't understand. And I think that people listening to this broadcast are starting to see the same things I began to see 2 years ago. And this is where we really start getting some traction because, you know, it's not that hard to see if you get the veil taken away from your eyes.
Oh, I spent last evening at a party with some friends out in the country. They have healthy young children, and they're living the ideal life. But they know that it's a risky situation.
Yeah. Well, you know, every time you come on, we always plumb a new subject. We always talk about some new stuff here. This was a subject we hadn't really jumped into with the Southern Poverty Law and Mark Lane and the rest. I'm glad you did it with me because, you know, this is the way that, these are priceless interviews that we do together, and they're going to live on beyond our day, I'm sure of it. And there's an absolute fact that each one of us needs to know, Eustace. And, you know, the fact is that we can beat these people, and I want people to know that.
Oh, and the American people haven't lost because these people I was with last night, these are frontier people. They're just like living on the frontier 200 years ago where you got the Indians to fight and everything else. It's the same situation. they know that to preserve their family, they're going to have to fight every step of the way.
Well, it's going to come down to that, and I don't doubt for a minute it's going to turn negative and violent probably, because I don't see that this has any other outcome, sadly, especially when the rug comes out from under the finances. I think things will get very dicey.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's always a place for you over here anyway, so.
Well, I look forward to it. I'm telling everybody, I've been offered political asylum in France and Japan, which is true. And I never in my life dreamed that I would have to seek political asylum. I thought America would keep going forever, and now it's gone.
Well, it is gone, and it's just a shell of its former self.
Oh, it is.
I want to let you know that I thank you so much, and my listeners thank you. Every time we do a file together, it's one of the most popular that we do. And you're a good friend of mine, and I look forward to our next visit together, Eustace, and I'll call you soon, my friend.
Very good. I'll be looking forward to it.
Thank you, my friend. Bye-bye now.
Goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Eustace Mullins, of course, one of the longest-standing researchers on the subjects that we cover on the French Connection, a friend of mine and somebody that I honor with his effort, because, you know, that his words of wisdom on these facts are timeless. And you really need to take heed to the things that Eustace says. And, you know, some of the details of the most recent machinations of these people need to be filled in by you. But the history is all there. The foundation of the crimes has been set many years back, and you don't need to jump very far to get to the next level. And so I'm asking my listeners to start doing research in their local community, start finding out the names of the ADL members and finding out the names of the JDL and the Anti-Defamation League people of B'nai B'rith in your local community, names from Texas and from Indiana and from Wisconsin and from Montana and Wyoming, and send me those names, because those names are the people that are really killing the country. And there will come a day when justice will be meted out. And it is that time, ladies and gentlemen, that those names will become very important for each and every one of us to know who's the criminal and who isn't. But until the next time, ladies and gentlemen, this is Daryl Bradford Smith saying, be well. Bye-bye now.